Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
So what's better than one superlative creative horror writer? Well, two, obviously, and we're delighted to actually welcome back to the programme for the first time since January this year, and indeed Halloween last year, the fabulous Francesca Maria. Hi, Francesca, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's always good. And of course, the wonderful English person living in Wales, because she crossed the border, Stephanie Ellis. How are you, Stephanie?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm freezing in Wales. I should go back down south.
Yeah, well, there is this notion that it's supposed to be springtime, but no, we've got a weather bomb about to be hitting us. So all's good with the world. But great to have you both back on the programme and obviously together from that point of view, and here to talk specifically, as well as obviously your own awesome material, about the women in horror scenario and system that's coming through. I mean, we spoke, I think, with both of you about obviously the legacy that Mary Shelley actually leaves from this point of view. But this is something which is a huge celebration. So, Francesca, would you like to just take us through what March is bringing to us as far as women writers in horror is actually concerned?
Sure, yeah. There are a ton of modern women horror writers that are just banging out phenomenal work right now. Some of my personal favorites, Kristi Noegle. She just had a collection coming out called The Best of Future, I believe. I think I might have gotten the title wrong. And then there's also a lot of local favorites here. Ellis Johnson, Lauren Rhodes just put out a Cemeteries Revisited essay book. It's phenomenal. I've also got a lot of friends. Tamika Olson just put out a collection. Unshod, Caged, and Naked. It's a phenomenal book. I highly recommend it to anybody looking for horror, body horror. So there's just a plethora of women writing horror. And the HWA, the Horror Writers Association, put out a call for nominees for the month. And they got over 200 women nominations for the month of March to interview. So they got overwhelmed pretty quickly. So it's a very healthy time for women in horror.
Yes, Stephanie, is this something that has you jumping for joy, or is it a case of that's 199 other competitors I've got to deal with?
Well, I'm not actually on that 200 list. I'm one of the extras. But I think on the one hand, Women in Horror Month is an occasion to be celebrated. And yeah, we're jumping for joy because we're promoting the work of women that are not just Mary Shelley or Anne Rice, the ones that people think of as women in horror. They don't think of the all those modern names that are out there now. So yeah, it's brilliant to be able to bring everyone else into it. But on the other hand, the fact that it has to exist in a way is quite sad. I think seeing women in horror is, it's getting better, especially within the indie genre, the small presses. We are getting more of the pie, if you like, but there is still a little bit of a way to go to even the playing field. So yeah, it is a bit of a double-edged sword. Yeah, it's great we're allowed to speak, to shout out about our work, but on the other hand, we shouldn't have to do it. So I see it two ways.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point that you raise, of course, because clearly we've had we're in the middle of the awards season, and we know that the Brit Awards decided to actually go gender neutral with respect to their writers, etc. I mean, Francesca, although we celebrate diversity, we're keen to actually develop that. Do you think Stephanie does have a point in terms of it's a shame, really, we can't just be a meritocracy on this one, and it's just good horror writers?
Yeah, you know, I would agree. I mean, the fact that we've got a month to celebrate women in writing. I mean, we're more than half population. It should be just celebrating
six
writers.
Months at least.
Right, exactly, right. But there is something to be said about highlighting a marginalized group that hasn't had a proper voice or a proper platform. And so I don't think there's anything wrong with highlighting it. But to Stephanie's point, we shouldn't have to. We should just all be writers, regardless of gender. But because we haven't been able to have the same kind of equal playing field for all of these years, it's still important for us to kind of be highlight each other and kind of lift each other up as well.
In terms of obviously the fantastic Black Cat Chronicles that you produced, a true horror comic book series, narrated, of course, by a mystical black cat. Do you often find when you look at the news headlines, and Lord knows as we look at the news today, there's sufficient horror that's actually in there, that sometimes the inspiration is literally all around you, and you know that black cat might be saying, "What do I do now?"
Yeah, so there's quite a bit of fodder. There's quite a bit of inspiration to be had out there these days with the different things happening in the news. But honestly, a lot of the stuff that I work on for my Black Cat Chronicles is stuff that's happened, quite a while ago. The most recent stuff has been from World War II. So I don't really look at a lot of modern stuff. I try to look at things that have a lot of legend to them, a lot of lore, a lot of mysticism, and that takes time to kind of create in the society. So I don't really tackle a lot of the modern day horrors too
Well,
much.
a crazy horror that was recently revealed with an expose of the British government's approach to the COVID crisis was they were seriously considering, as I'm sure Stephanie could attest to, executing all cats in the country and basically having a mass execution of the cats on the grounds that they could have actually transmitted COVID to human beings. Is that not right, Stephanie?
Yeah, I suppose it's a bit better than old King Herod, slaughtering the firstborn.
Either way, it's life forms, and that was the rationale that we did. So thank heavens your black cat wasn't in Britain, otherwise they could have ended up being an ex-moggy. I can see the shock on your face, and also Jessica Virtus, who joins us from Dublin, although actually the backdrop is true horror. I believe, Jessica, that's your North Carolina base there that I sort of threw up as a backdrop for the Theatre of the Mind area.
Yes, it looks so much warmer than Dublin is right now. I miss
Yeah,
it, but
well,
it's March now. So.
it's a weather bomb, and just Stephanie, of course, you're in the Wrexham, North Wales region from that point of view, and
Yeah.
Francesca, your location in the United States is,
California, Central Co Coast.
yeah, where it's obviously always freezing in California, and clearly, you wouldn't connect it anyway, so forth. So we go with that anyway. Jessica, you were not around to or able to join us when we featured both Stephanie and Francesca individually. So great that you're able to join us now from that point of view. What questions would you like to put to either of these fabulous fine creatives? And indeed, as you're a writer, a developing writer yourself, doing children's literature, etc., take it away, Jess.
Yeah, I have so many questions. I was rushing back here from something and I passed a street that had Bram Stoker. It was a street that Bram Stoker had lived on, and I feel like it was so appropriate for our call today, to see that sign for him. I would love to know how you go about kind of writing darker material, and especially when it comes to trying to make it a bit lighter for different audiences.
Who's going to go first?
Stephanie,
I
go
nominate
first.
Stephanie. Yes.
Oh, thank you. I'm not sure that I do it lighter. I think women horror writers, yeah, you get some who create extreme horror, but I think there's a more of a subtlety, a quieter edge to a lot of women's writing because they're able to fill in. They add layers, I think, because of the way. Oh, this feeds a little bit into stereotypes and things. The traditional role of the girl, when you're being raised, you're taught to be more social, to be more socially aware. There's the whole role of the nurturer. So in a way, you pick up on emotions and all sorts of things in a slightly different layered way that men don't necessarily always see. You only have to go in the house and you might see the housework needs doing, but a man might not see that. It's a different way of viewing things. And I think within horror, we add subtle little touches that really build up and they add a creepiness to it. So I tend to use some of my own experiences, but then build little layers with that. I'm not an extreme horror writer, but I do like to put in things that I have experienced a little bit, not necessarily, I don't go around murdering people, but the outlook and things like that, I'll add in those little nuances. And I think that is a skill in particular that women tend to have. And I've probably gone totally off topic there.
And obviously, we've got to ask Francesca the same question. Your own take on this, because obviously Stephanie's a more gentle, more subtle, more observational line. Is it a case of
Not
being
all
a DC
the
Comics
time.
fan, you actually go straight for the jugular?
I do, yeah. So my greatest pleasure is when I freak my horror writer friends out by having them read what I wrote. So I'm all about, it's not about the shock value for me, but it's about pushing the envelopes. You know, I think of horror as kind of the language of punk rock. I'm an old punk rocker. And with horror, there are no edges, there's no boundaries. And so Clive Barr kind of taught us that with especially his Books of Blood. So there's no limitation. For me, I don't really think of my writing particularly as being subtle. I'm pretty blunt object with some of my stuff. But I do agree with Stephanie that there is a lot of layers and a lot of nuance. And I write darker fiction primarily to work out my own fears. It's very cathartic for me, to what I've been processing and put it into my writing as a way of kind of getting it out of my system. So I don't tend to write horror all the time. It just kind of like Stephen King, it just kind of ends up being horror at the end of the day.
So mass extermination of a feline population is pretty much on the agenda in terms of, yeah, that could actually work really for yourself.
Awful,
No.
terrifying.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jess, back to yourself.
Yeah, I would love to know who some of your favorite women horror writers are. I think mine would have to be Shirley Jackson and Mary Wollstonecraft. And I think we're going more gothic, it would be Flannery O'Connor, but those three really stand out to me with stories that I've just absolutely loved. So I would love to know your inspirations and women who inspire you.
Let Francesca go first this time.
Sure. So I mentioned some of the modern female writers that I'm really inspired by, but also some of the classics. You know, Emily Bronte wrote some really dark, moody, gothic horror. We might not consider her in the genre of horror, but there's ghosts and trauma and a lot of spookiness in her writing that I'm really a big fan of. Also a fan like yourself of Shirley Jackson, of Anne Rice. You got to throw Anne Rice in there. As far as Mary Shelley as well. So quite a few I've been influenced by over the years.
So I'd agree with that with Shirley Jackson. I've got a whole shelf here. Well, not a whole shelf. I've got a lot of books there. So I do love her writing. I think I was looking into Gothic a while ago, and I was reading the work of Anne Radcliffe. So there was her, Mary Shelley. So yes, I was reading those. But it's hard in a way to find those older. You have to dig for those writers to find out who the female writers of their time are. As soon as you find one, it says, oh yes, they were well known at the time, but now they've been forgotten. So finding the older or the forerunners, shall I say, is a lot harder. And I do go digging around occasionally. With the modern writers, there are a lot of those, and I actually made a list of some. So current writers, I would say T.C. Parker is one in the UK who is a fantastic writer. She writes thrillers and horror. She is a very gritty, pacey writer. She's an excellent writer. Beverly Lee's Gothic, Catherine McCarthy, and then over in New Zealand, you've got Lee Murray. And at Bridge's Gate Press, there's even more than us, than Francesca and myself. You've got people like Antonia Rachel Ward. She does erotic horror. And I actually formatted that book, and I'm not an erotic horror reader, but I was reading it and I thought, oh, this is really good because it told a good story. So I think there is so much that women write, and they put things in that aren't there for gratuitous purposes. It's to tell the story, which I really enjoy. So I would say just look at the bookshelves. Don't necessarily go to Waterstones, because otherwise you'll just see the same things all the time. But dig around. There are so many. So women horror writers out there at the moment.
Not sure whether you'd classify it as horror, but there are certainly a whole number of horrific scenes in Jessica Burtis's recommendation for our latest book of the month, which is T. Kingfisher and A Baker's Guide to Self-Defense. I think that was the line from that. T. Kingfisher herself a pen name for a North Carolina-based author. Have you encountered T. Kingfisher at all, Francesca or Stephanie?
I know the name, and I was going to pick up one of her books recently. It was supposed to be sent to me for, to have a review, but it never actually came through. But she is one that I keep reading, you know, I keep seeing her name and thinking I must read that because the blurbs that I see of the books, they've got that sort of creepy chill factor that I really like in horror. It doesn't have to be blood and gore. There are some in mine, but if you can put your words together in such a way that it just gives that little prickle at the back of the neck, that little chill, that's the effect that I really, really love.
And of
Yeah, and
course,
same here. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
no, carry on.
I have heard of her, but I have not read any of her work, but I'm dying to do so. It's definitely on my list.
What actually drew you to T. Kingfisher, Jessica? Because as we said, it is a pen name. So she also writes, I think, as Ursula as well for another thing. And I have to say, I was very, very impressed with the Baker's Guide to Self-Defense, basically, or rather, A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking, to be precise. Let's get the title right.
I think something that I love about that book and kind of books similar is the theme of there's a lot of subversion that happens in these books. And I think that books that tend to have horror in them, but also have themes that subvert that is really interesting to me. I feel like it builds a very fascinating dynamic to read and it takes me off guard every time. And I feel like part of what I love about horror is that getting caught off guard. So I think that's something that draws me to certain books and would be the case with A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking. Plus the title, that's just a fantastic title. You're immediately like, what is this?
Yeah, I mean, the lead
So I
character,
think a good
Mona,
title.
I have to say, very, very. It starts off with a murder, Francesca, and literally goes on a roll from there, basically. So, no messing about and straight in there. Jessica, back to yourself. Any other questions for Stephanie or Francesca?
I would love to know for each of you, if you were recommending someone to start with each of your books, what would be your first recommendation to someone to start with your collections?
Francesca first, this is me slumping shoulders.
Sure, yeah. So I've got a short story collection coming out in April called They Hide, Short Stories to Tell in the Dark, and it collects 13 different tales based on a horror trope. So there's a witch story in there, there's a mummy story in there, all your favorite monsters I try to represent in my short story collection. And it's a good variety of the type of writing that I do. So I would recommend that. It's coming out in April. But if you want to get something before, I also write my comics, Black Cat Chronicles, True Tales of Horror, narrated by a black cat. And those are available on my website.
I think for me, it would depend on the sort of horror that people like because I do some of my work falls into specific genres. I would say I write in folk horror genre, and this world I've created in the Five Turns of the Wheel world is something I love. And I had so much fun writing it that I would maybe recommend that they go to the Five Turns of the Wheel and read that because there's little bits of my own life in there as well, my rural upbringing, the pub, and no murders as far as I can remember. But yeah, I just really enjoyed writing that. And I think sometimes, well, I enjoyed writing all my work, but sometimes I think if there is a book you particularly love to write, then that comes out when you read the person's book. You can always tell that they've enjoyed writing it. And so I would, the Five Turns is quite dear to my heart. But for a quick read, I would say, Pause. That's a quick novella. It'll only take a couple of hours if that to read. Set in my old home city of Southampton. Bit of a bio thriller in there, very quite pacey and yeah, circumstances you wouldn't want to be in actually. So I would recommend that. And then I've got a short story collection called The Reckoning, and that's my earlier stories. Most of those were published with a few new ones in there at the time. It's about time I did another one, but yeah, so there's short stories out there. So it depends what you want, really. But I do love my Five Turns world, and I've started writing the third one in the series now. So
I'm looking obviously at Reborn, again, the world of the wheel, as you introduced us to in the Five Turns of the Wheel, the story of Sununus, the father of all who has risen, born of blood offerings. He travels to the Layerings, one of those places like Umbra, which sits just beyond the human veil. That notion of piercing the veil, to actually cite the Pierce family's regular podcast that they actually produce, also based in Wales. Is that something which, again, you've always been fascinated by, the sense of the liminal, that creative period between dimensions and so on?
Yeah, it's just whenever I was walking home, you know, as a kid in rural areas, or if we go hiking now at certain times of the day, I would say dusk is one of my favourite times. And everything changes, and you just get this real sense that there's something else, that it's not quite what you expect it to be. And it's a really strong feeling that stayed with me. I could even go and sit out in our backyard towards the end of the day, even though we're in Wrexham and it's a bit noisy now, and just look up at the tree or up at the skies. And it just takes you away from where we are. I'm not a religious person, but I just get the sense that those times when the light distorts what you normally see, that there is something more, and you can believe in a way, or you can see why our ancestors believed that there were other things happening around the world. One thing that's really got me this week, one thing I've always wanted to see, are the Northern Lights, and we were able to see them in the UK, and I missed it, and we couldn't see them in Wrexham. But I know as far south as Stonehenge, there were pictures of the Northern Lights above the stones. And can you imagine somebody from centuries ago just seeing these things and thinking, this isn't every day, it's just different. And so it's something that I really like to explore, bring in all these strange things that could be true. Whether you would actually enjoy it being true or not is another thing. But I do love that sense of difference, of something not quite what it seems.
Well, let's face it, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney might just drop by any moment and actually say, write us a screenplay. We need to actually work with the whole thing. Which
oh, yeah. They're welcome.
We're putting it out there. You know, they obviously like to keep abreast of British media and so on. Francesca, any thoughts about a collaboration with Stephanie? I'm thinking about maybe Stephanie's description there about the veil, etc. What a perfect narration for your black cat.
I love it. I love it. And I actually just finished a short story for Halloween using Sernonos as one of the key players. So I can definitely see us collaborating. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Out of interest, why March as the Women in Horror Month, as opposed to obviously the more traditional time? Was it just a case of, well, that, I mean, obviously we do have March the 8th, International Women's Day, which is an interesting connection. That's over 40 years in existence as a work through from that. Was it tied in with that, or was it a case of, on a completely different line, I gather that we're also supposed to be celebrating World Obesity Day as well. I mean, I don't know how we're going to do that, but, you know, it's out there. Any thoughts in terms of why March was chosen as the time, as opposed to, say, any other month?
Yeah, I think it's tied to International Women's Day in March. I think that's part of it. But beyond that, I wouldn't know. Yeah.
No,
I was just going to say, it was February generally for a while, but that conflicted with, is it Black History Month? That there was something else, and it was, you know, the impact for both wasn't brilliant. So it's shunted along, and it's more appropriate now than maybe February.
I think in terms of dates, Black History Month now tends to be October. It's LGBTQ plus. It's all very confusing,
different.
But never mind.
Yeah,
you know,
the
it's
US.
Time. It's just an illusion. I'll just go and watch the Northern Lights. Anyway, Jessica, any other queries you'd like to provide, as I say, from your current Dublin base?
So I know horror is not typically the kind of book you'd want to jump into and kind of explore the world. I feel like it's one of those genres where you're kind of fine with not ever exploring that world of the book. But I'm curious about how you both kind of get into that atmosphere of your settings, because setting, I feel like, is such an important element in horror, and how you kind of transport yourself. Is there usually a place that you've been that you already have in mind, or is it kind of an amalgam of places? How do you think of it?
Francesca, we'll put you
Francesca.
on the spot first.
So first of all, I want to expand your mind a little bit in that horror is in just about everything you read. We think about horror as a very specific genre, but if you look at any modern classics, anything that you're picking up, there's a scene about fear and tension. And that is horror. And so, like it or not, you've been reading horror your whole life and probably just know it. So that's one thing. Two, when you're creating a scene, when you're creating a setting, what I personally try to do is close my eyes and imagine myself in that sphere, in that place. What do I see? What do I hear? What do I smell? What's going on in my senses? And then I try to capture that in my words and create that mood. So I'm a very visual writer. So I need to kind of see it to then write about it. And a lot of my work taps into the fear of my childhood of living in a haunted house. So it's very easy for me to go back to that place and to kind of feel that helplessness, that hopelessness, that sense of something bigger than me that has control over things that I can't control. So for me, it's really easy to tap into that kind of nerve.
Yeah, I'd say that's similar for me as well. Like in the Five Turns world, that is very much my rural childhood, the countryside that I grew up in. So my characters there, so I don't plot anything, it completely pants it. And I have this character, and as soon as they start telling their story, I just sort of, I'm in their head and I'm looking through their eyes and they take me with them. But it's usually across a landscape that I'm familiar with. And then in Reborn, I use the landscape of sort of Wiltshire and Hampshire around Winchester areas again that I've been to. So I bring in places that I know, and it does have to be visual. Sometimes when I'm trying to build up the atmosphere when I'm writing, I do like to have a bit of music on with the woodcutter that's coming out later this year. There was a scene where you've got this supernatural being in these woods, and I was using Behemoth's version of The Cure's a forest, and there's a video that goes with that of these sort of priests going through these woods, and it's night, and there are fires going, and it's really atmospheric. So I had the video and the music on loop while I was, and it helped me get into the right mood.
Well,
And again, when I write my other folk horrors, I tend to have what Viking music on, Heilung and Wardruna, a very sort of pagan folk type. And it helps, as well as the visual, it just changes the mood when I'm writing, and it helps me to be more present in that particular world.
and in fact, Stephanie, as regular folk will confirm, if you go back to Friday, October the 7th, 2022, when you made your debut on the program, we did indeed feature some of that Viking music and forest material on your file on your sort of first program, and it was quite extraordinary, really. So it is there. Just dig through the archives. Speaking of archives, of course, back in January, Francesco, we talked about you obviously having lived in a haunted house as a child. But also driving a 53 Chevy and being a psychic detective. So, got to ask the questions. Is the psychic detective agency still running? Is it still there? How are you looking to develop that?
I am still taking on cases. I work with a group of mediums, and we look at cases every week. Some of them are cold cases, some of them are active cases, some of them are really tragic, some of them are just, where's my dog? But some of the cases are pretty heartbreaking. And I actually do utilize my horror writing to help with that. And it also inspires my horror writing as well. I need to be able to take myself into the dark places to kind of imagine, allow my psychic abilities to kind of see, hear, and feel what might have happened to a missing loved one. I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't have my world expanded by what are some of the horror atrocities that people can do to each other. So horror has helped kind of open up my world to what's possible. And then seeing it in real life with the cases that I work on only then helps to further influence my horror writing.
Jessica, any other queries or questions you'd like to raise?
I want to know, out of all of the horror works that you've read, maybe that you've written, who would be your favorite character? And can you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, Stephanie, who which horror character would you most like to invite to tea? Maybe with a few sort of
Oh.
Brava beans and maybe a bottle of Chianti.
Oh, I haven't got the faintest idea. I could say Pennywise from it.
As the spider, or with the spider thing, or just as the clown?
Just as the clown, I think that would be really bizarre, but I can't think off the top of my head. If you'd sent me this question beforehand, I'd have come up with something.
Ah, yes, but it's the spontaneity that you lose then,
I
Stephanie, the
know.
actual spontaneity of life and so on.
I'm just looking at my bookshelves right next to me, and I
Who's
honestly
popping
think
out? Who's actually emerging from that point of view and saying, me, choose me?
there is Ray Bradbury's Something Wicked This Way Comes. I love that book, and there is the person who runs the carnival. I can't remember what he's called.
Played in the movie by Jonathan Pryce, I believe, for Something Wicked This Way Comes. And
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the
to
one
be fair,
who
most of
runs
Ray
the.
Bradbury's characters are great, including the Illustrated Man. He was very extraordinary in his own sort of magical way with his
Yeah, but
stories coming to life.
something out of Something Wicked, I think, maybe for me.
Okay.
While Francesca's answering, I might come up with somebody.
Yeah, Francesca, who are your dinner guests going to be from the world of horror?
Well, it would be hard to have them over for dinner because I think they'd be too big to fit in my house. But I'm thinking of Cthulhu and all of the weird, wacky creatures that H.P. Lovecraft created. You know, there's something about, I live on the coast, I live by the ocean, just those, frog-like entities with big eyes and webbed feet with human-like and humanoid features. I would love to sit them down and say, what are you exactly? And did you really possess H.P. Lovecraft?
Good choice. Stephanie, you've got something to add?
I just thought Frankenstein, and to see how he really felt about how, did he really want to live, how he was treated, what he thought of how people viewed him, because he is somebody different. If he walked down the street now, how would people view him? Would he be accepted? So I'd like to sort of sit and talk with him, because when you read the book, he isn't that necessarily that frightening monster that is portrayed as such in the films. There is a much more humane, or a broken human side to him. The one, I can get maternal over things, so sort of thing. I'd probably want to give him a hug as long as he's in the right mood. But yeah, Frankenstein.
So the creature as opposed to Baron von Frankenstein, effectively, as Shelley referred to
Oh yeah,
the creature.
Frankenstein's monster. Yeah,
Yeah,
I
yeah.
fell
I mean,
into the old trap. Sorry.
well, no,
Whoops.
it's just a minor point. I mean, you could have had Peter Cushing turn up out of the blue, basically. He said,
I'm not going
no,
to
I want the other one. I want, just go away on that
hug
system. Or Colin Clive could have actually sort of appeared from that perspective. Extraordinary. Personally, I'd probably go for Herman Munster, which is kind of like halfway between the two, basically, because I think he's fairly friendly. Exactly. Given the choice from that perspective, or Gomez Adams, maybe. That's a different line entirely.
Nice.
Maybe Uncle Fester. There's so many. Astounding. Well, we haven't quite reached the last two questions. How can people actually follow the fabulous Women in Horror material? How can people get in touch? What's the best way to actually stay in touch, of course, with your good selves? Stephanie, let's go with you first.
I would say just search for any. There's a hashtag, got hashtag WIHM. You'll often see trending around this time. And if you search for that, it will throw up all sorts of, in a nice way, all sorts of things on Twitter or whatever platform you're on. So anything like that. There's also a lot of the main sites, like I'm over at Horror Tree, and they are putting up articles by women in horror and promoting all their work. So just, it is very, very visible at the moment, so you won't have to search too hard, but use the hashtag and you'll find something there. My own work is at stephanieellis.org, and I'm also on Twitter at lstevie, but you'll find me in most places. Just type my name in and you'll find me. I'm not the There is a romantic writer called Stephanie Ellis. That's not me.
No, you'd be in for a shock, actually, if you went down one sort of route. I mean, either way, there are probably fans of the romantic writer who might sort of go to some of your material and think, what? Where? Who? But there we are. It's always important. And just again, another sort of subsidiary, Stephanie. I mean, obviously, we mentioned the collaboration. Would you consider collaborate with Francesca? Because it's got to be a two-way process here across the Atlantic.
I would enjoy it. I haven't done much collaborative work. With poetry, I have done some, and I'm continuing to do that. In other fields, I haven't, but I'm always open to do something new, something different. So, yes.
There you are. I see, Jessica, I feel as though we're giving a nurturing field on that side of things. It's all good. Francesca, is it francescamaria.com the best place to go to for yourself, in which you can see all sorts of things, including you wearing a wonderful badge called Foolish Mortal upon your person, basically?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so you can check me out, francescamaria.com, and I'm on, all the socials under Writer of Weird.
Well, we have reached that time where at the end of the Author of the Week package, which of course has featured Author of the Week squared in so many ways today, which is wonderful. Double the fun, which is all awesome. Jessica, would you like to put the first of those two questions to both Stephanie and Francesca?
I
Unless she's frozen somewhere
absolutely
in Dublin. Oh, she's here. That's okay. Carry on.
Hopefully the signal will continue. Stephanie and Francesca, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Stephanie, has it been a reasonably interesting Zoomer for yourself?
Oh, I've loved it. I mean, the time's just flown. It's been a really nice chat. I always dread doing these sort of things, but then you come on and it's just like having a chat with someone in your house. And then afterwards I think, oh, did I say something I shouldn't have? No, but it's been great
It's too late now,
fun.
Stephanie. You know, I mean, we've already sort of dealt with the massacre of the cats in Britain. I mean, who knows what could happen? It didn't, thankfully. That's the important thing. And Francesca, good for you.
100%. Yeah, always enjoy chatting about Frankenstein's monster and Cthulhu and cats.
Yeah, and that there couldn't be no greater horror than actually enduring the filmic version of the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, Judi Dench and her hairy nipples. Just don't get me started. It's just, I mean, that is a true, genuine night. Even Geoff Johns would have had, stretches to get to that stage. Anyway, next question, Jessica.
Will you guess again soon,
Yes,
Stephanie?
will you both kindly return? Can we look forward to featuring more Stephanie Ellis and Francesca Maria Goodness in the near future? Will you come back, Stephanie?
Yeah, I'd love to, whenever you want.
And Francesca?
100% anytime.
Excellent. There we are. Two fantastic authors, Stephanie Ellis and Francesca Maria. Huge thanks. Jessica, obviously thriving once again in Dublin. We'll hopefully get the connection sorted out before too long. But for now, keep on keeping on.
Thank you.